You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's not ready to send the articles of impeachment against President Trump to the Senate quite yet. We'll look at why she's delaying that action and what might happen next. First, a new report shows that fewer people are being executed in the United States. According to the Death Penalty Information Center, 22 inmates were put to death in 2019, down from 25 the previous year and 52 a decade ago. It was the fifth straight year with fewer than 30 executions. Also this year, California imposed a moratorium on executions, and New Hampshire abolished the death penalty. But over the summer, Attorney General William Barr said that federal executions would resume this month. Meanwhile, support for capital punishment is at a 47-year low. A Gallup poll shows that 60% of Americans prefer life sentences over the death penalty. Robert Dunham is executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center and the lead author of The Death Penalty in 2019 Year-End Report. Robert, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, before we dig deeper into the numbers, Robert, you use the phrase eroding. The death penalty is eroding in the United States. Why do we see this movement over time?
Well, I think that there are a number of factors that are involved. One is that crime rates are down significantly from the 1990s. They're down one third. But in that same time, new death sentences are down 85%. So we know it's more than that. And I think it's a combination of things. One is that there have now been 166 innocent people who've been exonerated after having been wrongly convicted and wrongly sentenced to death. And there is now significant evidence that the death penalty is not a deterrent. It doesn't make the public safer. And it is much more costly than alternative methods of punishment. So I think the combination of these factors and the fact that the death penalty appears to continue to be arbitrarily, discriminatorily, and almost randomly applied have led to a decreased public appetite for capital punishment and an American public that is less trusting of states to carry it out properly.
While those numbers were down, you were quoted as saying 2019 came close to being the year of executing the innocent. How so?
Well, this year, there are two people who are almost certainly innocent who were executed. And the courts made very little effort to review the innocence claims and to ensure that the rights of these innocent people were respected. In Alabama, there was a case of Dominique Ray, and Mr. Ray was convicted and sentenced to death based on the testimony of a witness who claimed that that Ray had committed a rape and murder of a 14-year-old girl. There was no physical evidence that linked Mr. Ray to the crime. And the fact of the matter was that the witness was severely mentally ill, was having active hallucinations and delusions at the time that he implicated Ray, and the prosecution withheld that evidence from the court and from the defense. When Mr. Ray discovered that, he attempted to have the courts review it, and they essentially declined. So he was executed this year despite significant evidence of his innocence. In Texas, a man named Larry Swearingen was executed despite overwhelming forensic evidence that was physically impossible for him to have committed the crime. The body in that case had been discovered in a state park, and the medical examiner presented by the prosecution had said that the body had been in the woods for at least 3 weeks. That was an important date for the prosecution because Mr. Swearingen had been in custody for 3 weeks and could not possibly have committed the crime if it took place after that. But subsequently, studies by a number of entomologists, that is, insect specialists, forensic pathologists, and a couple of other experts, all agreed that the body could not have been in the woods for even as long as 2 weeks. So the crime almost certainly occurred at a time in which it was physically impossible for Mr. Swearingen to have committed it. He tried to raise these issues in the courts. They said that either it wasn't newly discovered evidence or there were other pieces of evidence that could have been a basis for the jury to convict him and to sentence him to death. But the fact of the matter was that the evidence in this case had layer after layer of unreliability, and Texas almost certainly executed an innocent man. So those are two executions this year of innocent people. And then the cases of Rodney Reed in Texas and James Daly in Florida had two other almost certainly innocent men come to the verge of execution before they got stays of execution.
Talking to Robert Dunham with the Death Penalty Information Center, lead author of the Death Penalty in 2019 Year End Report. Robert, there's capital punishment at two different levels in the United States, states and the federal level. Let's focus in on the states. How many states in the United States still have the death penalty, and how many of those are actively using it?
There are 29 states now that have the death penalty. This year, New Hampshire became the 21st to abolish the death penalty, and that was the ninth state this century to have done so. So it's nine states in fewer than 20 years. And it appears that we're continuing on a one state every year or so pattern of moving away from the death penalty. In terms of active death penalties, with California's moratorium on the death penalty, there are now 25 states that either bar the death penalty as a matter of law or have gubernatorial declarations that executions will not be taking place. And this year, Indiana went for 10 years without an execution, making it the 32nd state in the United States to either abolish the death penalty or have not carried out an execution in more than a decade. And so we're really looking at half of the population in the United States in states where executions cannot take place, and two-thirds of the United States not having an active death sentence at all.
And where are the states where we tend to see the most executions?
They're almost all in the Deep South. Texas, of course, is the state that's executed more than anyone else. We're seeing executions in Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Missouri. There were only seven executions this year. I guess we should add Tennessee as well. South Dakota and Tennessee carried out executions this year as well. But for repeated executions, we're looking at the Deep South and Texas. Collectively, since the death penalty came back in the 1970s, the South has accounted for 85% of all executions. And this year, the South was responsible for 91% of all executions.
Then there's the federal level, and the Trump administration has been looking to change policy on capital punishment. Can you talk about what led up to this and what the Trump administration is looking to do?
Sure. Whenever a presidential administration changes, there's the question about whether the administration is going to follow what's happening with public opinion and the practices of the states, or are they going to become an outlier? And prior administrations, both Democratic and Republican, had retreated from the death penalty at about the same rate that the states as a whole had. When Mr. Trump took office, we've heard numerous public statements about trying to use the death penalty more frequently. And then this summer, the government said that they were going to reactivate the federal death penalty. They scheduled five executions for the span of 5 weeks, three of them to take place over the course of 5 days after not having carried out any executions at all in a 16-year period. The prisoners who were the subject of those death warrants went to court to try to stop the executions. In each case, they had their own legal grounds for trying to do so, but in a federal court in Washington, they argued that the Attorney General lacked the legal authority to issue a new death penalty protocol and to schedule the executions. And the district court in Washington agreed and issued what's called an injunction, essentially something that stopped the executions until it could more closely examine the issue. The federal government, through the Attorney General's office, appealed to an intermediate federal appeals court and lost, and took that up to the United States Supreme Court and lost. The U.S. Supreme Court said, we are not going to lift this stay of execution until we have until one of the courts has an opportunity to review the legal issues involved to find out if the injunction was properly issued. So there won't be any executions this year. The executions that were scheduled for January won't happen, but there is argument scheduled in the federal appeals court in the middle of January to consider whether the injunction was appropriately issued.
We're looking at the state of capital punishment in the United States with Robert Dunham. He's executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center, which came out with its annual report this week showing that for the fifth straight year, there were fewer than 30 executions nationwide. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you support or oppose capital punishment, maybe in certain situations? Why or why not? Wisconsin has not had capital punishment, has not had the death penalty for a long time. Do you like that state of affairs, or would you like to see that change? What do you think about the Trump administration trying to reinstate federal executions? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're looking at the state of capital punishment in the U.S. with Robert Dunham. He's the executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center, lead author of their new report, The Death Penalty in 2019 Year-End Report. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you generally support or oppose the death penalty? Is life in prison a better alternative than capital punishment for the worst offenders? Does it depend? What questions do you have about the death penalty in the United States, whether in states or at the federal level? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls now. Lucy is with us in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Lucy, hi.
Hi there.
What do you want to bring up, Lucy?
Well, I had a question. I am wondering if there's statistics behind the times that they've made mistakes. They've either executed and found out the person wasn't guilty, or someone is in the process of in line to be executed and found not guilty. Are there any statistics around that?
Yeah, there are statistics on the number of people who've been exonerated. That is to say, the people who are convicted, sentenced to death, their conviction was overturned, and then either the charges were dropped or they were acquitted, or for some other reason, they're no longer in legal jeopardy. So those are the innocence people, the exonerations. We have evidence of 166 people who were wrongly convicted and sentenced to death and have been exonerated in the United States since 1973. Now, when we compare that to the 1,512 executions that have taken place in that period, that turns out to be 9 executions for every person exonerated. And that is an error rate that is tremendously scary. The second part of your question is a little bit more difficult to figure out, and that is how many innocent people have been executed. Because there are many people who've been executed where we just don't know. And after someone is executed, most of the time, there is no effort to try to figure out whether the person was correctly executed or not, whether they were innocent or not. We have a webpage on our website that has more than a dozen cases where people were executed despite significant evidence of their innocence and very significant doubts as to their guilt. There was one case this year in Tennessee that is really instructive, and that's the case of a man named Sedley Alley, who was executed in 2006. Last year, some evidence became available that a serial killer had been in the area of the murder at about the time that it had occurred, and the Sedley Alley's daughter went into Tennessee's courts, represented by the National Innocence Project, to try to get DNA testing performed that could exonerate her now executed father and could shed a light on who the actual killer might have been. The Tennessee courts declined to allow the DNA testing, and that was really troublesome because the question of whether they had executed an innocent person could have been answered, but the courts chose to look the other way.
Lucy, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. James joins us now in Phoenix, Arizona. James, hi.
Hi, how are you today? I'm fine, thanks.
What do you want to bring up, James?
Well, there's the old adage when talking about sending an innocent man to prison in exchange for 300,000 people in prison. You know, in other words, you let everybody go just to save one person. Maybe in that case, you can ponder that wisdom till the end of the days. But when you look at, let's say, 30 people or less who are executed every year, and if one, even one of those could be an innocent person, I think you should abolish capital punishment, even if it means the society can't extract their pound of flesh through the other 26 people they may execute. You need to stop capital punishment if it means that you're going to even possibly execute one innocent person.
James, thanks a lot for the call. Robert?
Well, I think that's one of the arguments that proponents of abolition have been making. The death penalty obviously carries a risk, because we're human, that we'll get it wrong. One of the concerns that people express over and over is that we not only make mistakes because we're human and make mistakes, but we can't trust the law enforcement and prosecutors to try these cases fairly. One of the disturbing features of the exonerations is that the most likely reason that someone is wrongly convicted and wrongly sent to death row is prosecutorial and police misconduct. And we've done a lot over the years to try to improve the quality of evidence. We've done a lot over the years to try to improve the quality of eyewitness identification procedures. But there's only so much you can do to change the ability of courts to consider the evidence when, in some of these cases, you have people who are being framed. When in some of these cases, you have people who have gotten to death row because of police misconduct or prosecutorial misconduct. The people who are saying that the death penalty should be abolished say we always make mistakes and that makes it unacceptable. But they're also saying, joined by more and more conservatives and libertarians, that we can't trust the government to get this right in every case. Senator Steve Urquhart in Utah, a Republican state senator, introduced a bill to abolish the death penalty, and he had supported the death penalty, and he had supported a bill to carry it out by firing squad. And then he began thinking about it, and he said to some of his friends, what policies do we get right most of the time? And they couldn't figure it out. And he said, and what policy do we get right all of the time? And they all said, none of it. And he said, then why, if we don't trust the government to regulate shoelaces and to fix potholes, do we trust it to ensure that we aren't going to execute an innocent person? So that's the argument that we are hearing more and more in support of these bills to do away with capital punishment.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Robert Dunham is with us from the Death Penalty Information Center, talking about their annual report on capital punishment in the United States. We heard from some people on Facebook. Jeff says, when it comes to capital punishment, Jeff says, I'm against it. My only exception would be if the person admitted guilt, was judged mentally competent, and asked to be put to death. That seems like it would probably be a very rare scenario, Robert.
Well, it turns out that 10% of the people who are executed in the United States have voluntarily given up their appeal rights. But when we look at when we look behind those numbers, we find that it is largely the demographics of the folks who do that largely parallels the demographics of people who commit suicide. So it's very difficult to determine that these people are actually competent to do so. And that, the competency requirement that that our Facebook friend has talked about is really interesting, because it is something that the courts have a lot of difficulty in ascertaining. And there's one example this year that we mention in the report that's especially on point, I think. A gentleman by the name of Scott Dozier had admitted his guilt, and he wanted to waive his rights. He wanted to be executed, and the court had to make a determination as to whether he was competent to do so. He had had a history of suicide, but he assured the court that he wasn't suicidal. His lawyers disagreed, but the court conducted a brief competency proceeding and said, no, he's competent. We're going to let him waive his appeals. The execution got stopped for other grounds because Nevada had improperly obtained the execution drugs, and a drug maker sued to stop them from using their drugs. After the court halted the execution, Scott Dozier then committed suicide. So when we have these determinations of competency, it's something that courts frequently have difficulty doing, and it doesn't always assure that the person who is waiving their rights is actually doing so voluntarily as opposed to as a product of mental illness.
One issue, Robert, we haven't gotten into too much is that of a legal representation for people facing capital charges. What kind of concerns do you have about that?
That's always been one of the major problems in the United States. And all the studies show that one of the leading determinants of whether somebody gets sentenced to death is the quality of their representation. This year, Governor Matt Bevin's granted a commutation in the case of Gregory Wilson. He had been on death row for more than 30 years and was approaching execution. But he had been represented at trial by one lawyer who had never handled a felony case at all, and another lawyer who was the lead lawyer who did not have a law office, did not have a copying machine, had no law books, and listed as his phone number the local bar. That may be an extreme case, but that's the kind of thing that has happened in these death penalty cases. And the single most likely outcome of a capital case, once a death sentence is imposed, is that the conviction or death sentence is going to be overturned. And nationwide, the leading reason for overturning these cases is because of ineffective representation by court-appointed counsel.
Robert, thanks for joining us and sharing the report with us today.
My pleasure.
That's Robert Dunham, Executive Director of the Death Penalty Information Center. We talked to them about the group's annual report on capital punishment in the United States. It shows that the number of executions has fallen in recent years. A Gallup poll also shows that public support for the death penalty is at a 47-year low.